Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, before we get into the episode, I wanted to tell you a little bit about Paragons of Earth, the exciting new superhero comic I'm working on with Thomas DJ and Eric Johns. For this comic, we've unearthed a number of obscure and forgotten Golden Age superheroes, plucked them from the depths of the public domain, and completely redesigned and reinvented them for the modern day. It's an exciting cast of characters, and we're throwing them up against the threat of a Lovecraftian apocalypse. It's got action, it's got drama, it's got alternate dimensions and alien worlds, and it's even got a giant shark in a Hawaiian shirt. What else could you want? But in order to make this comic a reality, we need your help. The comic is crowdfunding now, and you can help support it by going to crowdfunder.com/paragonscomic. That's crowdfunder without the E, .com/paragonscomic. You'll be able to find that link in the show notes, so please double check if you didn't quite get it. Please help make this comic a reality. We are counting on your support. And now, on with the show.
Many years ago, a battle of good versus evil was waged between Samaritan and Nemesis. Twin brothers who became sworn enemies. But let me start at the beginning. They were freakishly strong. They unintentionally hurt people. The residents of the town grew to fear the brothers. They waited until the family slept, boarded up their home, and set it on fire. The parents were burned alive, but the twins were unscathed. Samaritan grew to fight for justice, to be a protector. Nemesis, consumed by revenge, wanted the world to suffer as his parents had. Samaritan tried to contain his brother's fury, so Nemesis forged a powerful weapon, a hammer that he poured all his hate and rage into. It was the only thing that could destroy Samaritan. Nemesis lured him to the power plant, where he would defeat his brother once and for all. Nemesis knew his brother would come to save the innocent. The brothers were equally matched. With the hammer, Nemesis had the upper hand. But not for long. We've all been told, but I believe Samaritan is still alive.
Welcome to the Superhero Cinephiles podcast. I'm your host, Perry Constantine, and welcoming a new guest today, and that is Devin Whitlock. Devin, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm good, thanks. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. I was glad to get your email, and before we jump too much into today's topic of discussion, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure, yeah. My name is Devin Whitlock. My pronouns are he, him, his. I have a couple of upcoming comics in the CyberSync anthology published by Apollo City Comics. I've also got a short comic in the Smash 2 anthology that'll be published by Forum Press Comics. Both will be forthcoming. The CyberSync Kickstarter campaign is actually wrapping up. It's down to its final week now, time of recording. So, but I guess I'm best known, as it were, for running the Chicago Public Library's Comics Book Club, or as we call it, the Adult Graphic Novel Discussion Group. I sometimes chafe at that name because we don't always read like graphic novels. We read trade paperbacks, we read memoir, we read cookbooks in comic form. lots of great stuff. But okay. I have a newsletter on Substack following all that we read, everything that we're going to read, and you know, all of my upcoming projects as well.
Awesome. Fellow Chicagoan. Well, I'm from the Northwest suburbs, so I know it pisses off people from the city when I say that, but I did go to university in Chicago, though, so.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, you're more of a Chicagoan than I am. I've only been here for about 20 years, so.
Well, that was about as long as I was there for, because I left right before I turned 25, and I've been in Japan ever since.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I arrived shortly after turning 25. So.
Yeah, switching back and forth here. So with those comics you said you worked on, what's your role in it? Writer, artist, inker, colorist, letter, anything like that?
Nah, just a writer.
Just a writer.
People always say, you know, don't say you're just the writer, but I mean, yeah, I can't do what the artist or the colorist or the letterer do. I'm blown away and impressed by every subsequent stage of development in the creative process. It's part of why I love comics so much.
Yeah. It's a grind, but it's also, there's a magic to it as well. I know that myself from firsthand experience. talking a little bit about, so you're not originally from Chicago, then where are you from originally?
I'm originally from New Jersey, actually. In fact, I went to school with Dr. Sai Islam, a previous guest.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I remember you mentioned him in the first email that you knew him. Yeah, yes. I haven't had him on in a while, though. I've got to reconnect with him again at some point. So I'm guessing that's how you heard about the show, then, was through him?
Pretty much, yeah. I saw that he was a guest. I moderated a panel in San Diego Comic-Con, of which he was a member.
Oh, nice. What was the topic of that?
To me, my X-Men, let me see if I can find the full, basically superheroes, comics, and academia.
Oh, cool. Stuff. Very cool.
Yeah.
So what kind of got you interested in superheroes in the first place?
Well, yeah, Psy was the major, he introduced me to comics in the first place. We were in fifth grade, and he gave me a copy of Vision and the Scarlet Witch, number 2. So I didn't have the first issue, but I could still kind of follow what was going on. And it was an issue of the Avengers. I always forget the number, but it wasn't Namorita, but it was like Namor's wife or whatever.
Oh, I think that
fish
was
woman.
Yeah. I think that was Marina, if I'm
Marina, right. That's it.
Yeah.
The one where she turns into Leviathan. Yeah, that's why I always have a soft spot for Monica Rambeau, Captain Marvel, because she was my first, and Dr. Druid, who the Doctor Strange knockoff Avenger, who maybe someday he'll get his day. But
I've read the Avengers comics with him, and he never impressed me at all as a character, but I've heard that the Druid series that Warren Ellis did in the early 90s was pretty good, though.
No kidding. Wow, I didn't even know that existed. That,
yeah, it was like more of a, it was more of like a supernatural take on it, more of like an occult take on it. So really leaning into like the Druid concept of it all.
Nice. Yeah, that always feels like, I was actually just talking with Sai about this the other day, that like a lot of the occult, you know, characters, it feels like a wasted opportunity. You go for the, you know, crazy surreal stuff, you know, the Doctor Strange, Doctor Druid, the Spectre, it's all
A lot of those stuff never seemed to really take much hold in the comics. There was a brief period like in the 70s and in the mid 90s with like the Ghost Rider craze, and the 70s they had a bunch of like Tomb of Dracula and that kind of stuff, but for the most part it's a hard sell, and like most of those books when they come out, as good as a lot of them are, they usually are pretty well. Like my favorite is the 90s Hellstorm series that also Warren Ellis did, at least the latter part of it. And like there's a recent one, this is like maybe like 10 years ago now, but it was a Howling Commando series, and it was but it was using like all the monster characters, and I can't remember the writer's name, but it was really cool. It was a really fun series, and they had like the Dugan was leading the team because he was like an LMD, and his consciousness would keep getting transferred every time his body was destroyed. So it was a pretty cool run.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, and that's funny what you said about how you started off with the second issue of Vision and Scarlet Witch. I remember that too, back in the day. My first X-Men comic was, I can't remember the number, I think it might have been 24, but it was like right before the Fatal Attractions crossover with Return of Magneto, so... And the cover grabbed me because I was into the X-Men animated series at the time, and you had Gambit and Rogue on the cover about to kiss, and I'm like, oh, are they gonna? So I read the comic because of that, and then it's just like it's just like this one of those small character stories where it's just like all focused on like the different character stuff and like. A wind down issue or a wind up issue before the big event type of thing. So, and I had no idea what anybody was talking about in it. They were talking about Magneto is dead, and who's this girl Ileana that everybody's sad about her dying and all this stuff. So I had no idea. I had no context for any of this stuff back then. But that's how it was back then in the early 90s.
Oh, that's how it is now. Like, you know, it's funny. Like in the comics book club, we have a lot of adults, but like this is their first experience reading comics a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes, you know, the hardest sell can be, you know, the Marvel books or the books that are too tied into continuity. Because they'll start reading it and they'll just be utterly lost from page one. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we did the Dark Phoenix saga a couple years back, and that just did not, you know, like we had like the one guy who was like, yeah, I remember reading this growing up and it was amazing and it blew my mind, and everyone else is just like, who are these people, what are they talking about? It was like,
yeah, Claremont's always like that. I think it's impossible to jump into a Claremont book without having some background information. Although now I think it's a little bit easier because you've got Reddit, you've got Wikipedia, you've got, you know, all the graphic novels, Marvel Unlimited, DC Universe, all these different services that you can use to catch up. Back then, it was just the issue, and if you wanted to figure out what was going on, because this is before the internet even really became a thing, so you couldn't, nowhere to look it up. If you had
maybe
a local comic book store, maybe there'd be an editor's note, but it'd usually say, refer back to this issue, and it's like, okay, where do I get that issue now? So I do kind of envy the experience that people have now where they can look that stuff up a lot easier. They could just hop on Reddit and say like, what does this mean? Where's this from? And whereas back then it was just kind of like, okay, well, let me go to the comic book store, if there's one around me, and see if they have that issue. And then you read that issue and it's like, refer back to this editor's note and another previous issue, and just nonstop. But yeah, it's a interesting thing with American superhero comics, especially Marvel and DC. You also said that, you know, Monica was your first Captain Marvel, so you've always had a soft spot for her. Have you seen the Marvels yet?
Not yet. I've got plans Thanksgiving Saturday to see that with a group of friends. Yeah.
Okay. I saw it and I really dug it. It was a lot of fun. You know, despite what the haters online are saying, I thought it was enjoyable. The shorter runtime, I think, was actually a good thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It was nice. Just a breezy like hour and 40 minutes or so. And then that's it. And then it's done. It had a really cool mid-credit scene, which I hope has not been spoiled for you. So
no, yeah,
good.
I'm
yeah.
going in stay blind.
Off,
yeah.
Stay off social media. Stay off the news aggregators, so nothing gets spoiled for you in any headlines or anything. But it's a cool one. You'll definitely enjoy it, I think. Oh,
excellent.
There's a Captain Marvel deep cut in that one. So it's really fun. So anyway, what kind of stuff are you interested in these days then?
A pretty wide breadth of genres, stories. Last month for the book club, we read Harrow County, and I'm about halfway through the whole run of that. Really love that book. And actually, speaking of Marvel and continuity, though, like this month we read Ironheart, Volume 1, mm-hmm. written by Eve Ewing, and that was actually really popular. And that was, a great introduction to a really cool character. I really like a lot of the new younger characters, like, Ironheart. America Chavez is, one of my that's the most original character they've come up with in, a long time. Mm-hmm. I hope she gets her due. And Ironheart, that kind of led me down to reading Cowl by Kyle Higgins and Rob Rees. If you're familiar with that one, it takes place in Chicago in the 60s. It basically follows the superheroes union.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, Higgins is doing some interesting. He's doing that with Image, I imagine.
Yeah, well, that I think only had like maybe 12 or 16 issues that came out a while ago. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because I'd recently read the first volume of his Radiant Black series under a recommendation from someone. And yeah, I really enjoyed that. It had this nice kind of like, superhero slash Power Rangers tokusatsu feel to it. So it was a really interesting book, and I could see why he was picked for power. You could definitely see why he loved his love for Power Rangers is not just, it wasn't just an assignment he was given for Boom. Like, you could see he's got a definite love for those concepts in that book.
Yeah, I've been hearing nothing but good things. What is it called? The Massive Verse?
Yeah, that's all I've read is that first volume of Radiant Black, but I am definitely curious to read what other stuff he's got in there, because yeah, it seems pretty interesting. So also I want to talk a little bit more about your comics work. How did you get involved in actually writing comics?
Sure. Well, I've always been interested in comics, and like even I've been trying to break in for a while. Mm-hmm. But it can be difficult. I've been joking that I finally have my first published comic coming out later this year, and it only took 30 years, but finally managed to make my dream come true. But life kind of got in the way. But this came about pretty recently, and almost by accident. I saw I call for submissions to the CyberSync anthology on, I think, social media somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so I had recently been introduced to the artist, David Escobar, great guy. But so I just asked him, hey, do you want to come up with something to submit to this anthology? And he was like, sure. So I really kind of wanted to challenge myself. So I came up with just a one-page beginning, middle, end story, and we got accepted. So
nice.
Yeah, thanks.
Awesome. So did you have the art done before that, or was it just based on the pitch alone and the fact that you had a team with you?
I mean, that definitely helped, but they were mm-hmm. they said in the call to submissions that they were looking for like near completed comics, because they want to get mm-hmm. this out to the printer like ASAP. So, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of thought to myself, well, even if I'll just go ahead and do it, create the whole thing, mm-hmm. and that way, if it does get rejected, you know, well, it won't be like money wasted. I'll just put it up on my newsletter, you know, hype it up that way. Right. But thankfully, it got accepted. So
good, awesome. Awesome. And then you've got another one coming out later on, you said, too?
Yeah. In fact, same creative team, too. Got the David Escobar doing pencils and inks, and then Buddy Baudouin doing the lettering. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. but yeah, that's a 4-page supernatural mystery. That one, thankfully, you know, I didn't have to worry about having like a completed thing. I just sent mm-hmm. in a pitch and a script. And mm-hmm. that was just a 4-page story that I, you know, hammered out in a couple of weeks, and then mm-hmm. you know, asked David for a couple of character sketches, sent that in, and then once I got the acceptance email, I was like, all right, let's do this.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, very cool. All right, so today, now for my part, I'm not. Because I've been recording so many of these episodes back to back lately, so it's hard to have stuff to talk about that I'm interested in. But I did finish Loki, so the second season, so that that finale, finally got to finish that. That was a really great finale.
Nice. I have yet to finish it, so
it's again, stay away from social media and headlines, because but it'll be curious to see what, if anything, they do with Loki after this, if this is his last hurrah, or if he will come back in some form. And then of course there's all the stuff going around with Kang because of Jonathan Majors too, and what's going to happen there. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from here now.
Yeah, I don't know, I finally got to see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, and I, for the life of me, I don't know why they aren't just pivoting to the High Evolutionary. That villain was like so, you know, much more impressive and intimidating and terrifying. And he's got like the whole support system. Like you can easily mm-hmm. see him going after the whole MCU. I don't know why. You know, I mean, innocent until proven guilty. But I hope we haven't seen the last of the High Evolutionary. I'll say that much.
Yeah, I mean, that was my one. Probably the only complaint I have about Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is the fact that Iwuji did such a good job as the High Evolutionary that I want to see him pop up again.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, I understand why I think I'd rather just see them recast Kang, and I think John Boyega's a name that's been floated around. I think that'd be a pretty cool choice. And I think he'd do a pretty good job. And there are also talks of bringing in Doom. I hope they don't go that route, because it just feels like they're just kind of like do a quick swap. And I think that would not work so well.
Yeah. Well, is the casting news for Fantastic Four like confirmed? I keep hearing
nothing like,
you know,
like all this stuff is. Yeah. All this stuff is complete rumor and conjecture. Like the latest rumor is, yeah, Pedro Pascal is in talks for Reed Richards. I mean, there's also saying that Mads Mikkelsen might come in for Doom, and which I hope that one's true. I think he would be perfect for that. But when we did the Doctor Strange episode, I said that, you know, I was really pissed they put Mads Mikkelsen in that movie because they wasted him when he could have been someone like Doctor Doom. So if they do that, I'd be totally on board with it. But at the same time, I've been burned enough. I'm old enough to remember when Michael Fassbender was going to pop up in WandaVision, and Mephisto was everybody from the mailman to the cicada, and how the universes would have, the Fox universe would officially merge with the Marvel universe, and how Hugh Jackman would pop up in Endgame. And so I'm even old enough to remember when Ben Affleck was secretly playing Deathstroke and Christian Bale was going to come back as Batman, and Jason Todd was really who Jared Leto's Joker was. And so
old
enough to remember all these bullshit rumors. So I do not trust anything that is not stapled to an official press release.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's funny that Mads Mikkelsen's getting thrown about for Doctor Doom, because he admitted, I remember reading an interview where he talked about auditioning for Mr. Fantastic mm-hmm. in the Miles Teller one. Yeah, and he said that he felt ridiculous. It was like, you know, like having to like pretend that his arm is stretching. He's like, he said he like felt defeated and just gave up. Like, it was like...
Yeah, but I mean, that movie was also pretty bad too. But yeah. You know, he wasn't Doctor Strange, and you know, you're willing to do a lot of stuff when they back a dump trunk full of money onto your front lawn. I remember all the times when, what's his name? Roger Moore said he wasn't sure if he wanted to keep playing Bond, and then Broccoli's just like, okay, here's another zero on your paycheck. And so he's like, and all of a sudden he was fine with continuing on with the role. but today we're talking about something completely different from the MCU, and that is Samaritan. This is a 2022 film. It was an Amazon Studios original.
Yeah.
And it is based on Mythos Comics graphic novels by Braggy F. Schutt. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yeah, you're a braver man than I am.
Yeah, and so apparently Schutt had initially wrote this as a screenplay at first, and then he had, and then what he had done was he had created it into a series of graphic novels before getting the screenplay picked up. And then eventually that led to interest in the screenplay. People are probably not very aware of this movie. I'd seen it briefly on Amazon, and so that was how I'd learned about it, but I never heard like anybody talking about it or anything. So for anyone who doesn't know, I mean, the basic idea is it's very similar, I thought, in a way to Apt Pupil. Do you remember that movie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, like Apt Pupil was this movie that Bryan Singer did with Brad Renfro. I think it was Brad Renfro and Ian McKellen.
Yeah,
where
Ian McKellen, yeah,
yeah, and where this high school history student, he's like obsessed with researching Nazi Germany, and he starts to suspect that his neighbor used to be like an SS officer, and he finds out it was true, and it's a really interesting movie. It's really pretty good potboiler thriller type of thing. But and then this seems to like have the same idea, but you know, kind of flipped a little bit, where instead it's this you've got this hero, the Samaritan, who's and then like 15 years ago, him and his brother, who was called Nemesis, they were they'd gotten these powers, and then Samaritan became a hero, Nemesis became a villain. They were fighting each other, and they died in this. They seem to have died in this fight.
Yeah, okay.
And,
or did they? Yeah,
or did they? Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, 15 years later, you've got this kid Sam who is obsessed with the idea of Samaritan, and he starts to suspect that his neighbor, who's played by Sylvester Stallone, was Samaritan. And you start to find out that Stallone does have superpowers, and it seems, and there's a twist at the end which might kind of seem obvious now.
Yeah.
Just by listening to us talk about it, we'll get to it. So spoiler warnings, if you have not seen this movie, we will probably be spoiling the ending. But at the whole time, at the same time that this is all going on, there's this like local gang leader or criminal called Cyrus, who is obsessed with Nemesis, and he's trying to like finish the work that Nemesis started by, you know, plunging the city into chaos type of thing. So, and Sam is kind of caught in the middle because he's this, you know, he's this poor kid, you know, living with single mom who is barely making ends meet. Like, she's often, you know, they're off, like they're getting an eviction notice posted on their apartment every day. She has to borrow money from her son
yeah,
to take the bus.
Yeah.
And he's doing, you know, like these small kind of like little crimes, like stealing copper wire from an abandoned building and stuff like that to try and make some extra money. And he ends up getting roped into this gang with Cyrus in some certain ways, because Cyrus kind of takes a liking to the kid and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of like the basics of where this movie starts off from. So what were, I think you'd said you'd seen this movie before when you first emailed me, right?
Yeah, well, I'd started watching it, and it felt like a bait and switch for Astro City fans, because you hear a superhero movie, you know, called Samaritan. It's starring Sylvester Stallone. Yeah, nope, not that Samaritan. Okay.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned Astro City in your email, and I remember being surprised. I'm like, wait, that movie was Stallone? That was based on Astro City? And then when I looked it up, nope. And it said it was based on this other comic book completely, I'm like, oh, okay, you know, yeah. So,
which I never heard, and I tried to find them, but I could only find, like, two issues from, like, some, like, Comic Vine knockoff that seemed had too many pop-up ads for me to feel comfortable ordering from. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can see it on, when I do a search for Wikipedia, I see the images pop up, but, that's about it as far as it, which shows you probably how much faith they had in this movie. Cause if they didn't reissue the comic or anything like that. But yeah, so I have no idea what the comic was like or anything like that. If it's better than this movie. But overall, what was kind of your thoughts about this movie when you watched it?
Yeah. When I first watched it, I didn't enjoy it, frankly. My husband was actually, like, you know, tried to join me, and then I think he made it through like 40 minutes. He was just like, you know, you can keep watching, I'll go do something else. but that character Cyrus, I think, represents like the fully wasted potential, like the best germ of an idea, you know, the idea that Nemesis was actually like the revolutionary character, but he was just cast as the supervillain because you know, that's how like media plays it or something. And I think if that had been, you know, how everything developed from then, this would have been like an amazing, you know, subversive, like, yeah, interesting, you know, superhero film. Could really, you know, redefine the whole thing. But then it just kind of, yeah.
No, I was thinking the exact same thing. Like when Cyrus gives that speech about how, you know, he's like, I've got a different perspective. Nemesis was actually the hero. He fought for people like us, whereas Samaritan only fought for the rich. He was basically just a cop in a mask. And I'm just like, oh, this is a novel take, you know, playing with the idea of, you know, the morality and the ethics of being a superhero, and who do the superheroes really fight for. I'm like, this sounds pretty interesting. I'm on board with this. And then that idea just kind of gets dropped.
Yeah. Yeah. And just never speak of it again. And then Cyrus turns into just a mustache twirling, you know, I think even literally, like, just, there's some, like, you know, like the newscast talking about the chaos of the city, that the financial district is getting attacked or whatever. Like, oh, okay. And then you know, he decides he's going to go on like a murder spree and, like, you know, plunge the city into, you know, chaos. And like, all right, well,
You know, the thing that drove me nuts about it is because I was getting a lot of Joker vibes from it, you know, the Todd Phillips movie. Because it had a lot of that same kind of idea with, like, you know, this idea of, like, you know, the city's workers are on strike. There's all this unrest in the city because of budget cutbacks and, you know, increased homelessness, and people are, and there's this, and the city is basically becoming a pressure cooker. And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And I'm thinking, like, all right, is this kind of going to be like the anti-Joker film, right? Is this going to be kind of like the other side of that, where instead of giving into that chaos, we see a hero rise above it and try to bring people together or something like that, which would have been so much more interesting. But instead, it's just, all of that is just background dressing and just gets completely shoved to the side in favor of what is basic, honestly, on its surface, a pretty boring story about this annoying little kid.
I eventually just came to, like, almost feel sorry for that actor, because, like, you know, he was on Euphoria, so, you know, like a critically acclaimed cable drama, probably thought that, you know, a superhero movie starring Sylvester Stallone was the next, you know, big step for his career, is gonna you know, take off for acting, and then just a wet thud of a whole thing.
Yeah, right? I mean, you know what, it's and this is, I'm completely biased, I will admit this, but I hate the precocious kid sidekick character. Aside from Short Round. Short Round is the exception that proves the rule. But otherwise, that kid in every single movie is just annoying as shit, and I just want to smack him. And that's exactly what Sam is in this movie, right? He's just this annoying look. Not only that, he's a freaking creeper. Like, I think it would have been actually a lot more interesting if it turns out that Stallone is not a hero at all, is not Samaritan or Nemesis, but instead it's just, because when he starts to suspect Joe, he goes to his room and he opens this door and we see he's got a list of people that he suspects being Samaritan. Yeah. And then he goes to this bookshop and the bookshop, this like indie bookshop, and the bookshop owner, he's like fed up with this kid. He's like, no, not you again. And he's like, who is it now? Last time you said it was your janitor. And it just like, kind of like, I'm like, this kid is fucking weird.
Yeah. If he was that could have gone like such a darker direction where like Sam's just dissociating from reality.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would have been a lot more interesting if Sam is hallucinating all this stuff. I think that would have been a whole lot more interesting as a movie. But no, it ends up justifying his, you know, his obsession. Oh, yeah. And it just like it's and like the whole,
yeah, you were the right way all the, along.
Yeah. And the way the friendship developed between him and Joe, I did not buy it at all. It just it all felt completely forced.
Oh yeah, they had a point A to a point B, and like even like that's part of why my husband gave up, is because the scenes don't seem to like follow one another. Like we're never really like it's just, you know, we've got a scene of, you know, Sam, then we've got a scene of Joe, then we've got a scene of Cyrus, then back to Sam for a little bit, and like, well, who's the main character? Who are we supposed to be following here?
I was talking about the runtime with the Marvels, which is very similar to this. Marvels is like 107 minutes or something like that. This is like 101 minutes. So very similar runtimes, except the Marvels moves at a pretty brisk pace. It's a fun movie. You get into it, and before you know it, it's done. And then this one, it just drags. Yeah. It makes you feel every minute of that 101 minute.
It was my idea. I almost feel like I should apologize.
No, I mean it's totally like I'm totally fine with. I do enjoy looking at movies that were, you know, kind of panned, because there is some stuff that I sometimes there's stuff I can find and say like, no, there's some good stuff here to talk about, right? It's not completely worthless. And again, I think there is some stuff about that, right? The, like we said, that whole idea of the hero's not really the hero we think he is. It's all just kind of like media propaganda. I think that kind of stuff is very interesting, especially, you know, we're seeing kind of a variation of that right now in the news at the time with the Israel-Palestine conflict, where for years, the Western media said like, oh, Israel is, you know, completely the good guy, completely in the right. And now we're starting to see that media narrative change and saying like, well, you know, maybe they're not as good as we always thought they were. And so we're starting to see the change in that media narrative. And that's an interesting idea to play with, how the media influences our perceptions of right and wrong, good and evil, and all that kind of stuff. And if they had played with that idea, they would have had something really interesting and really unique. But instead, and especially for the fact this came out in 2022, it feels like a movie from like 2002.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, you know, the abolish the police movement, you've got Black Lives Matter, you've got all these contemporary political concerns that could easily be folded into this. Boots Riley has described Marvel movies as cop movies, and he's not wrong. And I think, you know, like, that's a lot of fertile ground to play with. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and even the idea, like, you know, leaning into the, you know, instead of like Joe being this disaffected hero, but instead he's actually like just an exhausted revolutionary or something like that. You know,
well, especially because, you know, again, spoilers, but the big twist we find out at the end is that Joe wasn't actually Samaritan. He was actually Nemesis. And then after his brother died, he felt so much guilt that he just kind of, you know, gave up after that. And, And we see these little things, like when he's talking to Sam, when Sam's asking him, like, why are you fixing things all the time? Because he's always going into, like, the dumpsters and stuff. He's always taking these broken electronics and everything and taking them back to his place and fixing them up. And he says, I'll give Stallone some credit here, because he's not a bad actor. He can act when he tries. Oh. And he does try. And there are times when he is trying to, I think, do something more with this role than what he's given. And, I mean, I thought that speech he gave when he talks about how it's very easy to destroy things, but when, you know, you destroy something out of anger, but when you fix things, it's relaxing, it takes work. And I thought that was a really good speech he gave. And I thought, you know, he was earnest when he gave that speech. And I thought he did the best job I think anyone could have given this material. I mean, he's not an Oscar caliber actor, but he's also not, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme or anything like that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. And he's clearly having fun with it. I mean, like, whenever he, like, you know, like, betrays a little smile or, like, you almost, like, can't tell, is that, you know, the character, or is that just Stallone enjoying the fact that he can, like, be a superhero? Because, like, because he is, he's in the Guardians, right? In the MCU?
Yeah,
like,
Starhawk. Stakar.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, you know, he's the voice of King Shark in the Suicide Squad as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, the joy that comes through. I almost wish, that, you know, like, put Stallone's King Shark and Ron Funches' King Shark, you know, like the two sides of the, you know, the same character. So,
it was funny. I was looking at Letterboxd reviews, kind of see what other people were saying about this movie. And one person said, like, well, you know, didn't really like this movie, but I prefer seeing Stallone do this as opposed to just being the voice of a giant shark. I'm like, what? Are you crazy? I mean, Stallone is 76.
Oof.
Dude is in amazing shape.
Yeah.
He's in better shape than I am, and I'm like half his age.
Yeah. Seriously, oh my god. My dad's in his mid-70s and doesn't carry himself nearly as well.
No. definitely not. And just too, like, he does as good a job as anyone can, but, and again, that reveal of, you know, him being Nemesis comes out of nowhere. Like, it is just not developed, not hinted at. The only segments of a hint we get is that scene when he's talking about it's easy to destroy things, but it's harder to fix them. That's the only thing that we get to foreshadowing, but that could easily be applied to Samaritan as well. So it's too subtle. And it's just, when they get that reveal, I'm just kind of like, it feels like it comes out of nowhere. It feels completely unearned.
Oh, absolutely. Like and yet at the same time, like, you know, it feels telegraphed, you know, but not because of any, like, foreshadowing, but just because, you know, yeah, like, oh, you know, we better have a twist or something. Like,
exactly.
I think I was even, like, describing the setup to this movie to a friend the other day, and even he was like, oh, does he turn out to be Nemesis? Like, oh, well, yeah.
Well, someone also, another one on Letterboxd I saw, said that when you order Unbreakable on Wish. And they're not wrong. I mean, this does, it does kind of feel like they're trying to do, like, an Unbreakable type movie where, you know, at the end you get the twist that the guy you thought was a good guy is actually the villain all along. And, you know, it's kind of like a darker, more grounded, realistic take on superheroes. It does feel a lot like Unbreakable, but nowhere near as clever or as well executed.
Yeah, and, like, the whole, like, world doesn't, you know, in Unbreakable, I, you know, you could tell, like, you know, where everyone was and, you know, what was, like, happening, like, the landscape was filled in, sort of, like, this, in Samaritan, like, you know, we're told that, you know, oh, the city's on fire, but, you know, nobody seems to act with any sort of urgency about that, like, there's never,
Also, I don't understand, talking about the world building, I don't really understand what the impetus is for them to have these powers in the first place, or how any of this stuff really works. I mean, I mean it's one thing if you give me something like mutants in the X-Men movies, right? You establish that there's an evolutionary reason for why they have these powers. You know, in other superhero movies, you know, they establish there's a reason why these things exist. Here it's just these guys have powers. And somehow one of them crafts a mystical sledgehammer. I'm like, well, and then there are these weird blackout bombs. And I'm like, what is going on here? Like, there's none of this makes any sense. None of this is explained at all.
Oh, man, that sledgehammer. Like when did it suddenly become Lord of the Rings? Like, it just, yeah. Like, the way they frame it and the way that, like, it even has, like, a glowing red eye in the front. I'm like, what is that intentional, or is that, like, what, where did that come from?
Well, what kills me, too, is they give you, like, this very extended, very, dragging monologue in the beginning that's supposed to provide this info dump, but it doesn't tell you anything. It does not explain any of this stuff.
I tried to take notes when I was like watching this, and I just gave up. And like, yeah, that was one of the first things. Like, he gives like two lines of exposition, and then he says, "Oh, but let me go back to the beginning." I'm like, "We're 3 minutes in. What do you mean this is the beginning?" Like,
yeah,
it felt like a lot of it felt like it could have used another draft. Like, and that's part of why, like, I'm wondering just how much of this is from the comic, how much of it was developed. I've tried, you know, find a few like reviews and whatnot, and it does say that the comic kind of develops the idea that you know, Nemesis was actually more of like a revolutionary instead of a supervillain. But I know that that's all that it says, and yeah, like no origin story, no scientific explanation for why they have powers or how and you get like some, you know, explanation for how the powers work with that, like when he Stallone like starts overheating and he has to like run under the shower, and then he's like eating nothing but ice cream. But yeah, even then, like, you know, so does he only eat ice cream? does he need to eat like normal people or not? Like, yeah, nothing.
It also felt weird because like the effort he exerts himself in that scene, it's nowhere near as the effort he exerts himself at the end of the movie, and yet that first scene, it seems like he needs more to replenish himself, whereas at the end it's just like he gets splashed with just this brief dose of water and then he's fine. Like, when the pipe stopped pumping out water, I thought, oh, it's not going to be enough. He's going to die. And then it's like, oh, no, he's totally fine now. I'm like, okay, what?
Hey, there was going to be some sort of like tension or something. But yeah, no, it's just, yeah.
I mean, to be honest, I don't even know why you needed them to have superpowers in this movie at all. Because I think like if you had just had them as, you know, brothers who were masked vigilantes and, you know, no superpowers, just like, you know, they were just vigilantes, I think you could have, this would have worked just as well, because the powers are completely incidental to the plot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess, like, there's, like, some demonstration of, like, you know, super strength and invulnerability, but, like, you could have easily written around that. Like,
you could have, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason I feel like the powers exist in this world is so that there's no doubt that Joe was either Samaritan or Nemesis, right? So when he heals from that car crash, that's the only thing. Otherwise, we don't need those powers. They don't really factor into this story at all.
Yeah. Yeah, even like, you know, because the sledgehammer has like it's like the only thing that can defeat him. And there's like that weird, like, mystical, but I mean, it's still just a sledgehammer. Like, you can, like, at one point he's not even like fighting the sledgehammer, he's just punching Cyrus, who's just a regular guy,
right?
So
and the sledgehammer doesn't give Cyrus any powers or anything, so it just feels like, in which I think also would have worked a little bit better if it actually gave Cyrus some degree of strength or something. But otherwise, it's just like, I don't get why this guy's such a threat. Then you could just rip his head off.
Yeah. And even
also,
then,
sorry, go ahead.
What's his like final plan? He like drives a garbage truck full of explosives into the villain headquarters. Like, I feel like there's a cop in the background going, well, I could have done that.
Yeah, when he goes into the junkyard, I was expecting, like, oh, he's going to go into, like, his, you know, his secret storage where he's got, like, a spare costume or something like that. And it's just like, no, he's just going to go steal a garbage truck. I'm like, if you're going to, I mean, look, I know if you're going to use, like, the superhero genre and, like, you know, hint at these kinds of tropes, like, either use them or subvert them. Don't just hint at them and then do something completely different that doesn't serve any real purpose. And like also too, the costumes that Nemesis and Samaritan wear, I don't know about you, but I could not tell them apart in those flashback fight scenes
because
look completely identical.
Yeah. I think like they maybe in like close up, like the, you know, because you've had like Nemesis with like the but yeah, the just generic hockey pad costumes, nothing to distinguish. Yeah,
way too similar, way too generic, way too just boring. Like, there's just no sense of style or design at all. I mean, like, the Samaritan logo looks pretty cool, but that's about it. And it's just like, but it's just so used in such a bland way on the costume itself.
Yeah, they just spray painted onto the chest plate or whatever.
Yeah. Which, again, might have been okay if you were doing more of a just straight vigilante thing or something, but like the way you're doing it, where like you're trying to establish like this is some like epic superhero showdown type, it just doesn't work. It just feels very bland.
Yeah.
I mean, at the very least, give them, you know, give them completely different helmets or something.
Yeah.
Because when Cyrus, when Cyrus goes into the police station and he finds the two helmets side by side, I'm just like, which one is Nemesis, which one is Samaritan's? I can't tell.
I thought that too, yeah, because like, and then like the one, we're supposed to know that the one is Samaritan's because it's crushed, but then like, that didn't, and especially with like what we found out, like, okay, yeah, you know, Samaritan was the one who died, but that like, yeah, still didn't help.
We also had some now overall, you know what I kept thinking when I was looking at looks like he's a Dutch actor, I think, a Danish actor. I'm probably gonna mispronounce his name, but Pilo Asbuck, who plays Cyrus. You know what I kept thinking as I'm watching him in this movie is I actually think this guy might be pretty impressive as Sabretooth.
Oh yeah, I can see that.
You know, he had like kind of like
fur collar.
The fur collar. He's got kind of like that look. He's got kind of like that manic intensity. I thought he could probably, he might actually make a pretty convincing Sabretooth.
I can see that. Yeah.
And then we had Dasha Polanco from what's that show? Orange is the New Black as is Tiffany as Sam's mom. And you know, I liked seeing Martin Starr as the bookshop owner. It was a nice little. Because my wife was kind of like tuning in and out with me as I was watching this movie, and she commented on that. She's like, wait, isn't that, he looks familiar. I'm like, yeah, that's Martin Starr. She's like, he was from the Marvel movies, right? And I'm like, yeah, he was in the Spider-Man. She's like, oh, that's right. He was the teacher.
Yeah.
It is so funny because I knew Martin Starr first from Freaks and Geeks. And so now seeing him playing the teacher in the Spider-Man movies is pretty funny.
Yeah, he really has like developed completely, like, you know, Freaks and Geeks and then Party Down and now the, you know, teacher, you know, you could almost make an argument that like, you know, when his teacher character in Spider-Man retires, he opens a bookstore and, you know, this is
there
an unofficial sequel.
But also we had this, Cyrus's girlfriend who was also kind of like, she had like this weird relationship with Sam, which at first I kind of liked what they were doing with him, where it's like, you know, she's kind of like, you know, taking a liking to him, you know, she's talking to him about his family and stuff like that. But then she just turns around and just like on a dime, she just starts threatening him. And I'm just like, you could have had a chance here to make this character, you know, seem more like a human being instead of a cartoon character. And you just completely wasted it.
Yeah, she has that whole like speech about how like Cyrus is her family and found her when she was homeless and like, you know, and everything and yeah, and then just like with no motivation, just suddenly
on a dime out of nowhere. I'm like, this is an 11-year-old kid or 13-year-old kid, whatever he is. Like, he's and you're telling her don't threaten my family. I'm like, what do you think this kid's gonna do? Jesus.
Yeah, you're the and one also, with the guns. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's another thing too. I just could not. I think maybe this would have made more sense if Sam was a little bit older, and like that might explain more why Cyrus is interested in him. But overall, like that just it just doesn't connect really to it doesn't make logical sense why he'd be this interested in this kid being this involved in his operation.
There's like a couple of like throwaway lines about how, you know, oh, I like you, you're like scrappy, or you remind me of me, or whatever, and, you know, which again, like, you know, every like comic book villain cliche of the whole we're not that different, you and I. But then just no development, no, you know, connection. Like, he clearly, like, you know, like even that weird like quasi like attempt at humor where like you find out that Sam can't whistle, so he'd make a terrible lookout. Okay, we're gonna get a scene where one of his mentor figures tries to teach him how to whistle or something.
Yeah.
Nope. Just never comes up again. Completely irrelevant to the plot.
Well, also the whole idea of Sam's father, right, who was this criminal who Samaritan had saved at one point. That's also something that would have been interesting to explore a little bit, but it's just dropped like almost as soon as it's just like this one throwaway line and that's it. Like every time this movie has a chance to develop an idea and into something that would make this film a little bit more interesting, elevated above just, you know, kind of like a pale imitation of a generic superhero movie. It's like, oh no, we're too afraid to do that. We have to make it more generic.
I mean, part of it, I do kind of wonder if it was just like the circumstances of filming. Because I think on the Wikipedia page, I was like reading up on the production, and it said something like, you know, and filming began February 2020. That didn't bode well.
Right? Yeah.
Rushed this thing through as soon as they were able to turn it back on again.
Well, yeah, that seems what happened, because like it said that filming began in late February 2020, and then March 14th it went on hiatus due to COVID-19, and then in October 2020 it resumed again, and then it was released, you know, just last year. I do wonder like how much. It doesn't say when production completed, right? It just says that filming had resumed in October 2020. It was finally released in August 2022. So, like the consensus on Rotten Tomato is at 38%, but consensus is that although it's better than it could have been, it's creatively underpowered. And I think that's a pretty good way to describe it. There's some good stuff in here, but it's just they drop it as soon as it comes up every single time. And I, for the life of me, I don't know why. I am kind of curious to see what the original comic was like, to see if it, you know, developed those ideas a little bit more. Like you said, you know, the Nemesis thing is a little bit more, he comes off as more of a revolutionary in that. But the other thing too is like they said, according to Wikipedia, a sequel is in development for this movie.
Yeah,
and I'm just kind of like,
I saw that.
I don't know where you go with this, because you've already introduced and thrown away all the most interesting parts of this story.
Yeah, I mean, they show him like leaving the city, you know. So like, are they just gonna recycle the same plot? I mean, where you go from here? What
exactly? What, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, overall, it's, you know, I mean, the name thing didn't bother me, just because I've seen like tons of characters with the similarity to Astro City you mentioned, just because I've seen tons of characters that have the similar name. So that didn't bother me at all. But just like so I went in this with an open mind. And when I first saw the trailer, I actually thought, you know, even before you emailed me, I'd seen the trailer for this movie and I'm like, oh, that looks like it might be interesting. And it just.
Totally.
Yeah. And it just didn't. Again, there's some good ideas, but they don't connect at all, and it just ends up being very generic. I mean, you could just Google the poster, because it has this image of Stallone and in the Samaritan costume reflected underneath in the water. And you can see just from that, it does not look anything impressive.
Yeah. that poster too, like even that, like again, like so much of this seems like it was like rushed, or you know, they didn't get a second draft, because like that poster has two different logos for Samaritan. You know, you've got like the stylized S, and you've got like the orange one underneath the
That's
title.
That's right.
Like,
you're right. I didn't even notice that, but yeah, you're right. So yeah, just overall just kind of a disappointment. I wouldn't say it's not like, you know, again, it's not as bad as like Morbius or something like that, but it's just, there's just not much here that they're giving us to work with.
Yeah. Or they have so much to work with, and they just like, don't touch it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's, do you have any final thoughts about Samaritan?
I almost feel like it should be like remade immediately, and you know, but like with the, because I, you know, like developing all of the ideas that we've hit upon, like you know, like that's definitely a superhero movie, and like, and I know that there are comics that explore such ideas. I mean, you know, there's like plenty of indie books that, you know, the comic book Black by I think Boom Studios put it out, like that was really good, but yeah, enough said, I guess.
yeah. I mean, there. I, you know, I'm someone who believes there's no such thing as a bad superhero. That I think every even the ones that turn out bad tend to be just bad because of execution. Like I see this from looking at like a lot of these characters, and I'm working on a comic book based on public domain characters, and you know, looking back at them and trying to see like, okay, this, you know, this seems like it would have worked, this has got like the germ of a good idea, let's change this up here and find something here to do. I could easily do that with this character. Like there's so much potential here in this idea that is just completely wasted.
Yeah.
Okay, Devin, thanks for coming on though, and why don't you tell people where they can find your stuff?
Yeah, so I'm on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, Devin Agonistes. You can tell I was an English major. DevinAgonistes. The best place to keep track of all of my musings and projects is my Substack, Devin's Chicago Comics Book Club Digest. It's just devinwhitlock.substack.com. I look forward to maybe talking with you again someday.
Yeah, absolutely. And is that book club, if for people who are in the Chicagoland area, is that an open book club or is it closed?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, we meet the third Wednesday of every month at Gracie O'Malley's Portage Park.
Okay, because I know we've got at least some listeners here, and at least one or two guests who are from the Chicagoland area. So if anyone's interested,
awesome.
definitely look that stuff up as well. As for us, we are superherocinephiles.com. That's the website. Super Cinema Pod on the socials. That's Instagram and Blue Sky and Threads. Technically Twitter, but you know, now that Elon Musk has completely outed himself as a Nazi, I don't really go there anymore. So pretty much Instagram, Blue Sky especially, that's where I spend most of the time these days. So that's the easiest place to find me. Also, you know, you can support our comic book, crowdfunder.com/paragonscomic. That's crowdfunder without the E.com/paragonscomic. Links to that will be in the show notes, as well as to Devin's stuff as well. So please check those out. By the time you listen to this, the comics crowdfunding period will hopefully be finished and we'll be releasing it, but you will still be able to pick it up. So please make sure to do that. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening to the Superhero Cinephiles podcast. Superhero Cinephiles is produced by me, Percival Constantine, with the support of Zencastr. The show is created by myself and the late, great Derek Ferguson, our host Emeritus. Visit us on the web at superherocinephiles.com to listen to past episodes or find out how you can be a guest yourself.
Support the show by visiting our advertiser links or click the Buy Me a Coffee link on the website to make a one-time donation. You can also support us by visiting crowdfunder.com/paragonscomic. That's crowdfunder with no E, .com/paragonscomic, and help support my superhero comic book, Paragons of Earth. We are Super Cinema Pod on both Instagram and Blue Sky, so please be sure to follow us. We'd also appreciate if you could rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts and share us with your friends.
Thank you for listening. And as always, good night, good evening, God bless.